You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, December 21st, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, because I just couldn't bear to follow this whole payroll tax moratorium debate, Brian Beutler, here to tell us about this whole payroll tax moratorium debate. I followed it, but God, it's ridiculous. Fortunately, for the moment anyways, it appears like the Republicans aren't doing so well with it. But I don't know. Thank goodness for small favors. Also on the program today, folks, you understand that you're hurting the feelings of billionaires. And at this time of year, the Christmas, Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah, incidentally, Kwanzaa time of year, to hurt the feelings of billionaires, every time you complain about a billionaire, an angel loses their wings. That's right. Every time you say anything about those billionaire job creators, an angel loses their unemployment insurance. That's actually the even more damning story of what's going on the Hill right now. We will get to the unemployment insurance issue. Also, a great story out of Occupy Atlanta, working on foreclosures and an update on all of the active occupations, not just active Occupy groups around the nation. There are at least 60 ongoing occupations around the country, according to a Fire Dog Lake. We'll run down those. Wisconsin, Scott Walker's recall looks like it's going to happen, folks. And there may be time for another recall of one of these corrupt Supreme Court justices in Wisconsin. We will talk about that. Also, a wonderful little addendum to that National Defense Authorization Act. It seems that we've also now codified, if President Obama ends up signing this bill as is anticipated, we've codified renditioning American citizens to foreign countries, presumably either for a shopping spree or torture. Maybe just, or, you know, just like sightseeing. Bring back some photos of the pyramids. Or bring back some photos of one of those open-air markets in Syria after they torture you. And also in the better half of the program today, I will touch on, I've been gotten a lot of emails about, I think I discussed this in the better half of the program earlier in the week, a lot of emails about whether or not I will vote for Obama, or why I'm not calling for the dumping of Obama, because we know when I call for something, ladies and gentlemen, it happens all the time. We'll talk about this. Someone sent me a story from the publisher of Harper's Magazine, and we'll talk about that. Also, of course, what is it? Ça plus change? Is there something? There's some saying about the more things change, the more they stay the same, or something to that effect. And a whole string of Tea Partiers and young Republicans saying awful things. We will get that and more. But I want to play this clip before we go to the break and talk to Brian Boitler. This just happened, I believe, this morning in the House. It'll give you a notion of what's going on with this whole payroll tax moratorium. Oh, excuse me for one second. Let me try that one more time.
Speaker, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Audio from the floor of the House.
Pursuant to Section 3B of House Resolution 493, the House stands adjourned until 10 a.m. on Friday,
Mr. Speaker, December 23, Mr. Speaker, 2011. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask for unanimous consent that we bring up the bill to extend the tax cut for 160 million Americans. As you walk off the floor, Mr. Speaker, you're walking out, you're walking away, just as so many Republicans have walked away from middle-class taxpayers, the unemployed, and very frankly as well from those who will be seeking medical assistance from their doctors. 48 million.
We will be back in just a minute with Brian Boitler from Talking Points Memo. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Washington correspondent for Talking Points Memo, Brian Boitler. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Because this, I am. It's almost impossible now for me to bring myself to follow this stuff that's taking place in Washington. I'm just so. I find it so sort of nauseating. I still do, it's, you know, I don't know if it's the time of the year or just we're seeing this play over and over and over again. Although I have to say this time it appears, and I guess it's just a countdown until the football gets taken away. It appears at least that from a political standpoint, the Democrats are playing this a little better. Walk us through what's going on right now.
Well, so at the moment, I mean, this all sort of goes back to the weekend where Senate Democrats and Republicans had agreed to this sort of stopgap initiative to extend the payroll tax for a couple months. And House Republicans freaked out about that. They didn't want to campaign against President Obama on it during the middle of primary season. They didn't want to get pinched in their own districts after the holiday season. They were hoping to get this all done, you know, kind of quietly before Christmas, head home and have it off their plates for the rest of the year.
All right, wait, so let me back up for a little bit. What we're talking about is this payroll tax moratorium extension, which basically reduces the payroll tax from 6% to 3% on both the employer and the employee side. Is that correct?
Well, it actually only lowers it from 6.2 to 4.2.
Okay.
It's the same reduction. So this goes back to December of last year when the payroll tax was agreed to as part of that bigger tax compromise, that for 1 year workers would get a 2% payroll tax cut. And they're talking about extending that exact same 2% tax cut into next year.
Okay. The proposal that President Obama had offered to reduce it even more and reduce it on the employer side, that's dead.
That's basically been scaled down because, you know, over arguments over how to pay for it, the bigger the cut, the more money it costs. And if you're going to pay for it, which Republicans have insisted, that sort of becomes too expensive. So they Republicans, Democrats on the Hill basically agreed, let's just extend the existing tax cut.
And I should say that, you know, I have mixed feelings about this from a policy standpoint because of the implications for the Social Security Trust Fund, even though supposedly none of the money comes out of there. It weakens it politically. But on a policy level, it puts more money into the pockets of individuals at a time where it's needed. And the idea that we have to pay for it is bunk anyways, from my perspective. So let's look at this from a political standpoint. So that takes us, they make a deal on Friday. The Senate votes on it. They pass it with a lot of Republican support. And then over the weekend, all the people in Boehner's caucus basically freak out.
That's exactly right. And it's not all the people. There are definitely
I meant Republicans.
It's not all the people in his caucus either. There are definitely some Republicans, what few Republicans are left in sort of marginal districts, who are really scared about what their party is doing, but they're the minority in that party.
Mm-hmm.
And Boehner, you know, he basically catered to the will of the majority of his caucus, which said, let's not do this. Let's not accept the Senate plan. So Boehner threw his own, fellow Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, under the bus and said, we don't like your deal anymore. We're going to reject it. And that left him with basically, this sort of mealy mouth, you know, after a whole year of running the government by brinkmanship and forcing all big deals to be done behind closed doors, Boehner's now saying, well, everything should be done through the normal process, a conference committee where the House and Senate get together and iron out the differences between their two approaches. And Democrats are saying, no, we're not going to do the Lucy football thing. We compromise. This is the compromise. You agreed to it before your caucus freaked out. Be good to your word. And this preserves for them the right to run against the Republicans on this in 2 months anyway. And it really, for the first time, drives a really, really sharp wedge between factions of the Republican Party. And it's really kind of sort of testing John Boehner's speakership.
Yeah, I got to say, it's pretty hilarious. I mean, because they had wanted a 2 month stopgap measure because they couldn't get the full year of moratorium. Boehner's people freaked out because they didn't want to have to fight this battle to raise taxes essentially in 2 months when all the primaries are heating up. And Boehner, I mean, is there any way that Boehner can retain his leadership I guess we've said this before. So today I just played a clip of the House adjourning. The Senate's already adjourned, but it's not really adjourned because that would allow President Obama to have recess appointments. So what happens now?
Well, it's up to Democrats basically to steel their nerves. If they want to win the political fight, they can't cave to the pressure that Republicans are trying to put on them to come back to Washington to cut a deal. And to their credit, politically, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and Barack Obama are all on the same page. The deal is done. The compromise is set. They'll come back and talk about doing the full year extension and how to pay for it only if John Boehner accepts this 2 month thing just to sort of guarantee that they have enough running room to do the negotiations. And as long as they hold to that, Boehner's got no good options. Either he caves, in which case the conservative faction in his party will rebel, or he holds firm and the tax cut expires in front of the whole country with basically like unanimity among both the press and the rest of the political sphere that it's House Republicans' fault that this happened. I mean, John McCain is saying House Republicans are screwing this up. The Wall Street Journal is saying House Republicans are screwing it up. It won't be confusing to anybody who the culprit is. And if they let it expire and, you know, Democrats are saying, look at your last week's paycheck and look at this one. Where do those $40 go? Republicans took it away from you. They're going to, you know, that's going to have extremely deep ramifications into 2012. I mean, taking money out of middle class people's paychecks is sort of a way more tangible thing than anything Democrats did in the last Congress. and they got raked over the coals for passing health care, which nobody noticed any impact from, and for, you know, not passing climate change legislation, which, of course, nobody noticed any impact from. This will be really real, and they're going to know whose fault it is.
It's pretty stunning. I mean, this was like highly unpredictable. I mean, you have, again, this is a sort of the classic case of the Democrats more or less caving in some respects. You know, they had this 2-month compromise larded up with goodies for the Republicans. And the Republican Party is just so far off the grid that they can't even accept it. And now, like you mentioned, the Wall Street Journal, I mean, if the Democrats somehow cave in this instance, it's going to be just—it's going to be an epic political failure, isn't it?
It's hard to see what the upshot is from. There's one reason that part of me thinks that that's a possibility. And a few days ago, if you'd asked me, I would have said Democrats will be under a lot of pressure to come back to Washington to negotiate, and that's how they operate, and they're going to do it. They're going to cave. Over the last 2 days, I've sort of changed my mind about that. But
yeah, I would think the Wall Street Journal saying Democrats have won this would be somewhat helpful to stealing them.
Oh, I think it has been. I think that it would make sense to me, and this is not based on any reporting. The White House is prepared to see this thing lapse, but they're also worried about what happens to the economy if it does.
Right.
I mean, it's great to blame congressional Republicans, and I assume that they'll actually win that spin war, and that people will actually blame House Republicans, but they have an economy to deal with, and they're not running against House Republicans. They're going to be running against Mitt Romney or whomever, and they don't want this, you know, $1,000 a year per family drag on the economy to hit right now, just as Republicans are about to pick their nominee. Because while Obama's hitting congressional Republicans for making the economy worse, Mitt Romney's going to be hitting Barack Obama for making the economy worse, and that's a tough argument to win when unemployment's at near 9%. That's the one reason I think I'd only put the chance of a Democratic cave at about 10% right now, but that's the reason for the 10%. I mean, I speak to Republican aides on the Hill who say things are pretty bad right now, but if this lapses, and then if they don't fix it right away in early January after it lapses, then Republicans have a huge, huge problem. They've squandered a 3-year-in-the-making strategy to sort of undo the Obama presidency.
Right, and I imagine, at this point, you know, the Republicans are not going to be able to last more than 30 days with the Democrats every day saying, look at your paycheck. I mean, right?
Right.
I mean, after the first week, I would imagine the Republicans are going to scurry and they're going to come in and the Democrats, of course, will still give them everything they want, even though they have the leverage at that point. But at the very least, they'll have that political advantage. Now, simultaneously, there's another element to this, too. We have unemployment insurance is still sort of up in the air, too, isn't it?
Yes, there's the third, too, unemployment and this patch to the Medicare physician reimbursement formula. The Medicare doctors are scheduled to get a 27% pay cut on January 1st, and that's wrapped up in all this, too.
That's known as the doc fix.
The doc fix, right, exactly.
And there's an attempt. The doc fix is basically to make sure that those cuts to providers, those deep cuts to providers don't happen, because they in turn basically say, I can't afford to provide medical care for people on Medicare anymore because I just suffered a 27% reduction in my reimbursements.
Right, exactly. So you know, the way Democrats are talking about this is that Republicans are risking, you know, 160 million workers who benefit from the payroll tax cut, several million who get unemployment checks, and 45 million seniors whose doctors won't be able to provide them care anymore. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen Democrats in lockstep on policy and on talking points to this extent for, I mean, maybe as long as I can remember. There's really no division. There's maybe one Democrat in all of Washington saying that they're on the wrong side of this, you know, like Joe Manchin or somebody like that. But for For the most part, I haven't seen them speaking in unison in the same terms about the same thing for as long as I've covered politics.
Do you think that from your perspective, and because you're intensely focused on what's happening with politicians in Washington, what do you think that the narrative shift has happened in the wake of the Occupy Wall Street movement across the country? Do you think that this ability for Democrats to sort of settle on a message is a function of that, or because that's what I've been saying for a while, but I want to, from your perspective as a guy who's in Washington, if that's overstating the case.
I think that contributed to it to a great extent. I'd say this sort of sea change in what the focus is on in Washington comes from maybe three or four things in equal measure. One is the Occupy movement, particularly in its earliest days when it was getting the most coverage, when it had the highest favorability, when it really kind of opened America's eyes up to the fact that there's more than just the Tea Party out there that cares about what's going on in the country. That was a big wake-up call. I think second and related was President Obama's decision finally to shift away from this agreement that all anybody should care about are budget deficits and what to cut, what programs to cut. Whether they can get, a halfpenny worth of tax increases from Republicans. When he started talking about jobs,
he helped
focus the country on the fact, we have other problems in this country and they're more immediate and they're bigger. So that helped, and that was obviously related to the Occupy stuff. I think the third thing that's sort of more inside baseball than outside baseball is the way the Republicans handled the debt limit fight. When they went home after having nearly, caused the country to default, after having scared, America's investors and small businesses and kind of very clearly in front of the whole nation were playing chicken with the entire U.S. economy. They went home, they got an earful. They came back and they were talking about a whole different slew of topics. They didn't want to revisit the debt limit fight. They didn't really want to talk about the debt crisis anymore as the predominant issue. It was sort of night and day between whenever it was August 1st when the debt limit deal was cut and early in September when they came back. And Republicans were much more muted in their criticism of Democrats, trying to strike a gentler tone. Trying to pretend at least that they were working with President Obama on his jobs bill. So I think those three things kind of woke the Congress up to the fact that they were really, really screwing up, and that voters to a greater extent than usual were saying, "The hell is my Congress doing?"
Those three things are self-reinforcing too. I mean, Obama comes out on Labor Day and talks about jobs, and within two or three weeks, you've got people marching because of the lack of jobs and the lack of attention paid towards essentially the 99% of the country, and you have a weakened Republican message about the debt, and all those things conspire together. So how is it if the Republicans were sort of at least thrown back on their heels by their constituent reaction to the debt ceiling limit, they changed their rhetoric, they toned down their rhetoric, but I mean, where do they get the balls essentially to rebel in this way against their leadership? Because they have to know that when they go home for Christmas break, people are going to be like, "Hey, dude, where's my pay cut? Where's my tax cut?"
Right. A lot of them don't like the payroll tax cut because it's something that Obama came around to supporting. they've been listening to the Wall Street Journal for 2 years, 3 years. I mean, there were some Republicans who were talking about a payroll tax cut as an alternative to Obama's stimulus back in 2009. But even then, the Republican Party wasn't all that warm on it. They don't really care about tax cuts for the middle class. They care about tax cuts for the upper classes. I, on top of not really agreeing with the policy, they don't want to hand President Obama victory right now. And then there's this sort of, you can't really divine intention from it, but to the extent that the economy is in the crapper, they're happy about that. That redounds to their benefit. It makes it more likely that there'll be a Republican president. And so they have very little incentive to do things that they think or that the president thinks will really improve the economy. It's been kind of hilarious to watch them go from them kind of being mealy-mouthed, no, we don't really think this payroll tax cut is a good idea, to them saying it's 1 year of a payroll tax cut or nothing. We're not going to do this, you know, 2 months, half measure nonsense. I think they'd like to have the balls, as you said, to go back to their districts and say, no, you don't get your payroll tax cut because that doesn't work and you need to suck it up. They can't. They haven't been able to do that. They've been trying to sneak their way into killing this thing, but it's been a total disaster for them.
This is actually a happier story than I had thought, but I'm very hesitant to get too cheery about this because so the best case scenario going forward, the almost impossibly best case scenario, is that sometime in January when the House and the Senate return, the Democrats feel like they have enough leverage so that they'll actually be able to tie in a payroll tax moratorium with things like unemployment benefits without having to drug test and, you know, cavity search every jobless person in this country, and also get the dock fixed. That's the best case scenario that will never happen, right? And then the worst case scenario is that the Democrats read the Wall Street Journal, see that they're winning, and immediately retreat.
I don't know that I'd say it would never happen. I think that right now, I mean, let's say Democrats do sort of cave on this, you know, sort of procedural issue and come back to Washington to negotiate with Republicans. They say, okay, there's 10 days left. Let's see what we can do. They have all the leverage. So they can say, all right, you don't want this 2 month extension. Well, we can do a year extension, but we're going to do it on our terms. And if we get down to December 30th, December 31st, and we haven't come to an agreement that's favorable to us, then you have to pass this 2 month thing. And at that point, I think Republicans will have no choice but to do it. So even on negotiating grounds, Democrats have a huge opportunity here to strip all that stuff you're talking about, the drug testing for unemployment benefits, this unrelated rider on industrial boilers to allow them to spew toxic pollution into the atmosphere, et cetera. They can get all that stuff out, I think. I think they've got a really great opportunity to do that, and they see that. And then I think, you know, and the worst case is that they, you know, they don't do this. It kind of lapses for a day, two, three, 4 days, and then they come back together. They put their heads together, and Democrats give Republicans some fig leaf to say they didn't cave.
Right.
And they pass, you know, a temporary extension of all these things. I think that the scenario you laid out is plausible, but I'm actually a little bit more optimistic than you are.
All right. Well, I'll take that to the bank. Brian Beutler from Talking Points Memo. Thank you very much. You've actually cheered me
up
a little bit.
I was in a
cranky mood today, and now I'm feeling better.
Well, your next guest will appreciate that then.
Oh, exactly. All right. We got to take a break. Thank you, Brian. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about that unemployment insurance. I feel a little better, which leads me to believe that the Democrats are going to screw it up. We'll be right back. You know, the end of the year comes and everybody has their top 10 list. I think we're probably going to be doing a year in review of the news sometime over the next week. I am hoping to get Senator Catherine Harris to sit down with me, or near Senator Catherine Harris to sit down with me, and treat the news in review for the year with the proper respect that it deserves by getting someone who was nearly a senator of the United States to sit down with me and review the year's news. But typically at the end of a year, different websites, different news organizations. They come out with their top 10 list or their biggest blank of the year. But it's pretty rare to see an entity come out with their biggest blank of the year and have it literally undercut their credibility and almost render them useless in the year to come. And I'm speaking of PolitiFact, which apparently is an outfit. Who's behind PolitiFact? Do we know? Some like news organization or just like some dude in a van or what?
It is a project operated by the St. Petersburg Times.
Okay, so the St. Petersburg Times has their PolitiFact, and what they supposedly do is they say, in this controversy between these two parties, usually these two political parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, we're going to measure the truthfulness of any given contention. Now, here's a theory that I want to just put out there. Maybe all journalists should do that. Maybe instead of saying the Republicans today say the world is flat and the Democrats say the world is not flat, instead of just leaving it there, maybe journalists should say Republicans today say the world is flat, even though we all know it isn't. Here's a link to all the evidence that the world is not flat. Democrats countered with the world is not flat. And they're right. And here's another link to all that evidence. Maybe that's what journalists should do, but sadly they don't. So it's a marketable feature that you actually say, hey, this claim is, in fact, BS. Well, Dave Weigel reports that a couple of weeks ago, he pointed out that Paul Ryan, he of the Kill Medicare proposal, and we'll get to that, Paul Ryan's PAC was sending out emails to encourage their members to email PolitiFact and vote for the biggest lie of the year to be that Paul Ryan's Medicare proposal killed Medicare. Now, what did Paul Ryan's Medicare proposal do? It killed Medicare, but it called it Medicare. So, in other words, Medicare, which we all know is a government-sponsored social insurance program in which we pay into, and Medicare then, as a social insurance program administered by the government, pays for healthcare bargains now in instances with healthcare providers. It's a much more efficient system than the private health insurance system. We know it spends 3 cents on every dollar for administrative costs versus 25 cents on a dollar for private insurance. Well, Ryan's plan basically says, take the what you would normally pay for Medicare for health insurance and essentially give it back to seniors in the form of coupons or vouchers that they can go out and supposedly buy private insurance with. I say supposedly because private insurers don't want old people. They don't want to insure old people because old people tend to get more sick. So to deal with that, they raise the prices. And all calculations showed that under Paul Ryan's Medicare program, it also, seniors would go out of pocket more than they do under current Medicare projections because it's no longer a government-run insurance program. It's just simply coupons to go buy private insurance. Well, PolitiFact said that this charge by Democrats, that Paul Ryan's plan would destroy Medicare, was a lie. You understand this is the functional equivalent of me saying to Matt, where's that car you promised me? And you say, oh, I got the car I promised you. I cut it in half. It has only two wheels. There's no windows on it. There's no back seat. Here it is. And I say, Matt, that's not a car. That's a moped. And you say, no, it's a car. I took it all from car, from that car that you lent me or whatever it was. And I said, I'd give back to you. It's the same thing. It's just, I changed it a little bit, but it's still a car. I call it a car and I go, no, it's a moped. It has only two wheels. A car has four wheels. And you go, no, dude, this is a car. In fact, check with PolitiFact because they're saying you're lying. This is a car. It's just not a car as you've known it. So PolitiFact, in announcing their lie of the year, has now essentially announced that they are fundamentally worthless as a truth-telling organization. Now give me my goddamn car. Believe me, I wouldn't lend Matt my car. No way. No way.
I'm a good driver.
So we were talking briefly with Brian Beutler about this unemployment insurance. The Republicans really don't want to extend unemployment insurance, and we know why. Because when you get unemployment insurance, you don't want to go back to work. You don't look for more work. In fact, as Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah said, I don't see why you have to go more than 59 weeks. Understand that we are having a sustained unemployment in the likes of which we have not seen in 70 years following a recession. And the federal government has instituted a program where they extend unemployment benefits to 99 weeks, which is still kicking hundreds of thousands, millions of people, if not, off the rolls to fend for themselves. Hope that they can hang in there until they get Social Security, which, of course, if these elite have their way, they'll raise the retirement age. So Hatch says, I don't see why you have to go more than 59 weeks. In fact, we need some incentives for people to get back to work. A lot of these people don't want to work unless they get really high-paying jobs, and they're not going to get them ever. So they just stay at home and watch television. I don't mean to malign people, but far too many are doing that. Well, I have a question for Senator Orrin Hatch. How the F do you know that? Where's the data? Because the data that is readily available to everybody else, like I mentioned the other day, put out by the Joint Economic Committee, a nonpartisan function of the Congress, says that beneficiaries of federal unemployment benefits have spent more time searching for work than those who were ineligible for unemployment insurance benefits. In fact, since Congress enacted federal unemployment benefits, time spent looking for a job has tripled among the long-term unemployed who are out of work as a result of job loss. And why is that? Because they're able to fund themselves to get to pay for transportation, to get cars, whatnot, pay for gas. They're not scrambling around looking how to borrow money from their relatives to pay their bills. And of course, House Republicans want to put a slew of roadblocks to getting any amount of federal assistance in terms of unemployment benefits, including drug tests. I don't know if there's actually cavity searches, but I wouldn't be surprised. More than 3 million people stand to lose unemployment insurance because of what the Republicans are doing. It would go like this. In January, people would begin to feel the effects. By mid-February, the Labor Department estimates that 2.2 million workers would have lost jobless benefits. And by the end of March, 3.6 million will be affected. So hopefully, much as I have sort of my, I would rather see any moratorium on tax cuts for the middle class not even be made up by the budget at this point. I don't want to see cuts anywhere else. We need more government spending. And as much as I would prefer other forms of stimulus to the Social Security tax cut moratorium, hopefully the Democrats will come back as the Republicans are over a barrel on this and use their leverage to help unemployed people. And in fact, unemployment benefits are far more stimulating to the economy than any other mechanism, at least that's on the table. It's far more so than tax cuts, because every dollar you put in the pocket of an unemployed person, you know, is going to get spent because they need the money. All right. It's time to move to the after show, the better half of the program. I will do that. I'll tell you that story of the bankers crying like little babies and potential new rules that will kick in by Dodd-Frank. We'll discuss the dump Obama. Also, Occupy Wall Street. Talk about the occupations that are still ongoing and this great story out of Atlanta. We've talked about Occupy Atlanta in the past, moving towards, particularly, I think we spoke on this program about Occupy Atlanta, didn't we? Was that for Ring of Fire?
I believe we mentioned what they were doing.
Oh, I think I did a full interview about Occupy Atlanta.
Yeah, we didn't do that on here.
We'll talk about that. I will debunk that myth about Germans and Greeks again, because apparently nobody's listening. And just a wonderful story about our drone program and our government's ability to take all of you people, all of you near supporters of possibly related organizations that might someday in the future be considered somewhat terroristy, and rendition you to a place where you can be tortured properly. All right, folks. Once again, if you can become a member, it is your membership that supports this program almost exclusively. So please, there are thousands of you that listen to the show on a daily basis. Surely, you know, if 10% of you, not even 10%, 5%, 4%, I don't know, I'm not good at math, but an extraordinary low percentage. If you all decided to become members today or tomorrow or next week or in 2 weeks, I'll give you 3 weeks. I would barely ever mention it again, ever, till I die. I don't know, that may be an exaggeration, but I mean barely. I want some room with, I want some flexibility with barely. You can also support this program by buying your crap through our Amazon link. All of which, or you can buy justcoffee.coop, fair trade, organic coffee. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. We're soon to have a majority blend. All of this is available on the click the support the show at the header of the majority.fm site. Also, please, we're going to have a link on the front page of majority.fm to a listener survey. It literally, I think it's like 3 or 4 questions. It'll take you a minute to answer it. You don't have to leave your email. It asks for it, but you don't have to leave that. That will help us with our podcast server. What else? Give us a review on iTunes. And merch is available if you so desire. All right, folks. See you in the better half. You can call me at 646-257-3920 or I am me at Majority FM. See you in the better half.